All right, good day, nerds, and welcome to the Nerd Cantina Show interview number one. So this is going to be our first of our interview series where we're packaging up what used to be found in just the normal Nerd Cantina shows. And this is our first time that the interview is going to be featured as its own episode. Again, we talk about it this week's episode of the Nerd Cantina Show, but what's driving this is really we want these interviews to last, and we want them to be enduring podcasts that people can come to a year from now and download and listen to. And it's not hidden behind an hour of our ramblings about whatever's happened that week.
Yeah, this should be interesting going forward. Like you said, the topics that we discuss in the interviews have a longer lifespan than the weekly nerd news topics that we discuss, especially this week's episode talking about parenting and gaming. We definitely want to be able to feature that in a way that will keep people coming to this issue, because I don't see this being a problem that goes away in the next decade or so.
Yeah, so this episode being with Dr. Rachel Cowart. Dr. Rachel Cowart is the author of A Parent's Guide to Video Games, as well as the co-editor of The Video Game Debate. And she spent her professional career doing research and studying research on video games and how it relates to children, to development, as well as social behaviors.
Yeah, when we booked this one, I was really looking forward to having this conversation. I was glad I was able to make it home in time to be a part of the interview. And I hope most of our listeners can enjoy it. Even if you don't have kids now, I'm pretty sure most of people are going to have kids eventually. And if you are a nerd that likes gaming, at some point you're going to want to know some of the things that she talks about. So I was really glad to have booked this one.
Yeah, so enjoy the interview, and if you gain some value from it, share it with some of your friends that have kids that don't know really how to bridge this gap and how to approach video gaming in their household. I think it is great beyond just the nerds that are our current audience. So share it and get it out there. But without further ado, here's the episode with Dr. Rachel Cowart.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, nerds, we are excited to be joined today by Dr. Rachel Cowart. She is the author of A Parent's Guide to Video Games. She also co-edited Video Game Debate, and now she's also part of Take This, which is takethis.org, a nonprofit organization which is focused on decreasing the stigma and increasing support for mental health in game enthusiast community. And we are excited to have her. So, Dr. Cowart,
hi. How are you? I'm so glad to be here. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well again. So to give you background, Steve and I had a conversation a couple weeks ago on the podcast where we were talking about a new game that we were playing with our kids. And we talked about the frustrations of our kids not being able to keep up with us and the objectives we were trying to have in the game. But then also the conversation kind of snowballed into us not really knowing at what point we want to have our kids engage into video games with us. And I talked about how my son had yet to play games. He's 5 years old, and he started playing the games, and immediately that's the only thing he can talk about. He's played it like twice, and that's it. And I quickly came to the realization that I'm completely inept in understanding what's the healthy way to bring video games into their lives, because it's going to happen. I definitely don't believe video games are the devil. I definitely don't believe whatever headlines you're going to read about video games being terrible for children. There's a healthy way to incorporate things. There's a healthy way to gain benefits from video games. I believe that there are benefits to it, and maybe that's my video game bias. But that's where I started reaching out for some material and some information to educate myself as a parent. And I came across your books, and I was immediately drawn to them because, one, 90% of the books you find on Amazon or whatever else, they have these like dark images of children with their face glued to a tablet, or they're really trying to go towards that negative side of why we should just as parents kill all screen time. And I feel you have a great balanced approach.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And a lot of parents have the same question, because games are everywhere and you hear all the terrible stories. But on the other half, you also have the good stories about, oh, but games are also educational and games can help hone a wide range of skills. So for me, I mean, my children already play games. My daughter is 4 and she's been playing games probably as soon as she could pick up a tablet. Little shape games and little alphabet games. I mean, we're not quite at like Stardew Valley, which is what I'm playing right now. But so I think you know, balance again is key. You can start them early. There are tons of great educational games. We play a lot of Endless Learning Academy. Okay. I don't know if you've seen that. But it's really great, and I swear that's the reason my child can read because it sounds out all the sounds and they spell words. And I mean, not an ad. I should probably get paid for advertising Endless Learning Academy because I just think it is such a great tool. But it's not something to be afraid of.
Maybe before we get too deep into it, yes. Maybe I give you an opportunity to really introduce yourself and your background before we jump too far. Please, for the audience who may be encountering you for the first time now.
Of course. My name is Dr. Rachel Cowart. I am the research director of Take This, which, as you mentioned, is a nonprofit organization that provides mental health information and resources to the gaming community and the gaming industry. I have been studying games and gamers for almost 15 years with a specific focus on the effects, the uses and effects of digital games. I always try to keep my work, you know, balanced, looking at the positive and the negative. But really, you know, it's where the science takes me. I published a few books, as you mentioned, and I am excited to talk about parenting in games because my latest book, A Parent's Guide to Video Games, has kind of been a passion project of mine to take all this information we have, you know, in the quote-unquote ivory tower of game studies and make it relatable to the people who need the information the most, which are parents.
You go where the science takes you, but I think you went into this field probably hoping to justify some of the video game playing because you are a nerd at heart. What makes you a nerd? What are you a nerd about?
Oh, I'm a nerd about so many things. So you mentioned that what brought me into the field is I was playing a lot of World of Warcraft and I was doing my master's degree, which is a degree in counseling. So I was seeing parents and families and there came a time, this was 2006, 2007, height of World of Warcraft. There came a time where every client I saw was like, my children are playing World of Warcraft. I feel like it's doing something bad to them. Is it doing something bad to them? And I started to think.
That was pre-BC?
Yes, it was pre-BC. Vanilla WoW.
This pre-BC is, yeah, that's still vanilla WoW.
And in my head, I thought, is it doing something to me? Because I play a lot of it. Like, if it's doing something bad, it's definitely occurring to me as well.
I met my first wife playing World
of Warcraft.
Like, yeah, we were guild masters together.
Oh, that's awesome. So those were the glory days, World of Warcraft, weren't they? I guess I was hoping it wasn't having negative effects, but it was really genuine curiosity as to what is happening by spending so much time with this media. So World of Warcraft nerd, Final Fantasy nerd, Dungeons and Dragons nerd most recently. I play on Clinical Role, which is a D&D group of geeky therapists and researchers, and has become my new love over the last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't hide from Google nowadays, especially when you're doing a YouTube. One of the first things I came across when I was looking up some of your information was I came across your character development YouTube episode where you were being taught how to create your druid.
Yeah, because I've never played D&D before, but as I mentioned, huge like role playing video games. I mean, I've been playing Final Fantasy since Final Fantasy 1. I mean, I'm very into role playing games, but Dungeons and Dragons was very intimidating because it's just like, well, what color is your hair? Well, I don't know. Well, it could be anything. Well, I don't know. So it's been a learning process for sure.
What color is your hair?
My hair is blue because I'm a water genetic.
All right. Well, you've established your nerd street cred to our audience here who hopefully everybody is some level of nerd as we focus on movies, comics, video games, all of the nerd culture here. And like I said, our audience is a bunch of nerd parents or nerds who may be future parents, or maybe they just want to know why they're so screwed up and whether they can blame it on their parents letting them play video games. Either or. What I kind of selfishly want to know is, when is the appropriate time and how do I healthily share in one of my passions and one of my hobbies in playing video games with my kids? Because yeah, I started with the educational tablets and games with my children, and that's an easy way in. And I cheat and don't consider that even gaming yet, right? It's an introduction to it. Putting a controller in their hand and playing free-for-all games and different types of games. Now, when does that become healthy?
I mean, I don't think there's ever a point. I mean, any time, okay. Honestly. I've played Mario Kart with my daughter. I think That's a whole nother conversation, playing Mario Kart with a four-year-old. But I think the issue is about the content being age appropriate and them being developmentally ready to be able to handle the frustration maybe of Mario Kart, because my daughter was not ready for that. so I don't think that there's a level of healthy or unhealthy. I think the discussion has been framed that way a lot because of the information we receive from kind of the moral panic side of the effects that people think video games might have. But if we instead frame the discussion as more, this is an activity we can do together. This is just one of the many things. I mean, I like to make crafts and then I like to play video games and I like to, you know, walk around outside. It's just one of the many things we can do with our children. And so I think the key is age appropriate content and then developmentally appropriate challenges. They're just going to get all kinds of frustrated on Rainbow Road.
Well, you mentioned that frustration, and that's kind of what I enjoy mostly kind of about playing video games with my daughter, is I watch her get frustrated and I try to help her work herself through that, you know, and right now she's currently playing the remake of Spyro.
She's trying to
get the hang of running and jumping, and you know, I try to get her into some side scrollers to make that a little easier, but she wants to play the dragon game with dad. Yeah. So I leave her to her own devices, and oftentimes she'll come up to me and ask, you know, like, Daddy, can you do this part for me? And I'll tell her no. Like, if you can't beat it, you know, and initially it sounds like you're, you know, kind of being just the jerk of a dad, but 15 minutes later when she comes and she finally makes that jump and she runs up the stairs and daddy, I made that jump. I find that to be a very good teachable moment where you tell them, you know, see, now how does that feel? Don't you feel, but you know, like you wouldn't feel that way if daddy did it for you, mm-hmm. and things like that. So I find right now with me also having a 4-year-old, that's where I'm really like trying to focus my character building, I guess you could say, with my daughter playing video games.
That's the perfect example, because they're learning frustration tolerance. They're learning persistence. It is something you're doing together. You're there, you're coaching her. No, you can do it. You can do it. And then they get that sense of accomplishment afterwards. That's the perfect example of the beauty of video games with children.
Now, I don't know if my kids are uniquely I won't say, you know, addicted or obsessed or do any kind of those buzzwords, but it does have a behavioral change for my son specifically, that there's a different son on a day where he is playing on a tablet or playing a game, and then nothing else really matters to him. it's hard to bring him out of that vibrancy.
To that dopamine rush. Yeah. It's their first kind of like introduction to a dopamine rush when they get to play video games and achieve those things. And when they do succeed, it gives you that, those endorphins and that dopamine to your brain. And dopamine is addictive. Like it does have addictive property.
And then I ask him to play a game of Monopoly Deal with me afterwards, and it's like, well, that doesn't do it for me anymore, Dad. Like, we just let's go turn the Xbox back on.
Yeah,
the games are designed to draw people in and to kind of get us to play and play longer. Is there really a concern there, or is that just something I'm perceived? And my son will just grow out of this, and he'll gain satisfaction playing board games with us, which is what we do nearly every day at home.
Well, video games, like you said, are incredibly engaging, right? So they master the challenge with the skill of the player. We get in the state of flow, and that's it. We're in it. All we want to do is play it. All we want to do is play more of it. And like you mentioned, that's just the way they are designed. So if you put a donut in front of me, eating a donut will also give me a dopamine rush. And if like I'm halfway in this delicious donut and you pull it away from me, I will also be in a bad mood. So I think that it's not imagined. I think it's definitely part of it. The advice I usually give parents in terms of trying to mitigate that issue is about setting clear boundaries. Like, okay, you can play for an hour. And when it's 15 minutes till the hour's up, because they're in the state of flow, they lose sense of time. Okay, there's 15 minutes left. Make sure that you're, you know, wrapping up. And yeah, they still might be a little irritated when you pull it away, but it definitely mitigates the sense of like anger and frustration when you're like, get off, you have to get off, it's dinner time. And they're right in the thick of like the state of high engagement within whatever game they're playing.
Okay. And, you know, I remember having my marathon sessions of Mario and Metroid and all the games that I grew up with. Is there any thought or concern that today's games are just slightly more, because they're so much more vibrant than essentially like real world now? Like there is almost nothing that compares. Is there today's games more kind of challenging to bring into their lives, or is it really all the same? It's just have a healthy approach, have a reasonable approach towards it.
I mean, if we follow the research, which is what I like to do, they're not really, they're
no change.
Just as engaging as Mario, Super Mario was when I first came in, or, you know, Mega Man 3.
Yeah.
that was a hard one for me to put down. There, it's just because the graphics are, you know, more detailed and the games seem to be more immersive does not necessarily mean they're more engaging. People still love the retro games, right? They're coming back into style. So. But I do want to mention about marathon sessions. So there's a difference between being quote unquote addicted or having problematic play behavior as compared to being highly engaged. So if you get a new game over Christmas break and you're playing it 7 hours a day for the 2 weeks of Christmas break, but then school starts again and you go back and everything goes back to normal, that's just a period of high engagement. I mean, I see a big uptick of people saying my kids are addicted to games. It's like, well, it's vacation and they got a new game. Start thinking about it being problematic behavior that you think maybe we need some kind of intervention. It has to have dramatic negative impacts in every single area of the player's life. So occupationally, socially, physically, psychologically, every area of their life over a prolonged period of time. And when you ask parents to think about that, then they start saying, oh, well, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's not as much of an issue as I thought maybe it once was.
We've kind of touched on the younger side, you know, us both having 4-year-olds and how it's good for them constructively and things like that. A lot of the parents that have a problem with the excessive gaming are the ones that have the teenagers. Mm-hmm. And the teenagers are not coming out of the room and they just want a game. And, you know, when they get home from school, and with video games being so socially immersive now, you know, we both have a World of Warcraft background. I have 8 friends that I've never seen in real life, or I've only seen once because they've taken a trip to Chicago. I think parents associate it with like isolation and antisocial tendencies and things like that. And I don't think they associate a lot of times that, you know, he's actually hanging out with his friends. He's talking to people. You're also, you know, I played with a guy in Brazil. I learned a lot about Brazilian culture playing a video game. You know, are they just too disconnected because we do have that generation gap? You know, a lot of parents think, well, I grew up in the video games. I played Mario. I know what's up, you know, but nowadays it's kind of really totally different. You know, you really do build bonds with people, some of those that you never get to physically meet in life, but you still build emotional connections and have social engagements. Do you think there's just like, a parental disconnect from it?
Yeah, I think a lot of this issue comes from the fact that from the outside in, it does still very much look like an antisocial activity. Like if you walk in and your child is in their room with headphones on, you hear them talking, but like World of Warcraft, for instance, you don't understand maybe he's leading a raid of 20 people or he's chatting to a guild of 100 people and being incredibly social. The stereotype of the lonely, antisocial, you know, teenager is absolutely erroneous. Gaming is highly social. And honestly, for me, in terms of talking to parents about the dangers of gaming, it's the social aspect in terms of socializing with strangers and like stranger danger that to me is the most dangerous part of gaming today. Don't be worried. Most people play with people they already know and don't give out personal information. But when people say, oh, I'm worried that games will make my child violent, or I'm worried that games are inherently addicting, I say, what you should be worried about is stranger danger. That is a real fear. But yeah, I think it is a generational gap where if you don't experience it yourself, you're not aware of how rich and social the activity actually is. And there's tons of research supporting the idea that the friends you make online are considered as real or more real than the friends you have in face-to-face interactions. They're highly emotionally charged relationships. These can be very, very good friends, even if you've never met before.
Are there any numbers that we could look at as far as teenage depression kind of pre, I guess you'd say 2001 and then 2001 after, kind of when the social networking, because this does give, you know, those isolated, you know, these a lot of these gamers may not find anyone in their high school or in their neighborhood that they can identify with and build a bond with, but they're able to find somebody online that they have something in common with and they share a bond. Is there any kind of study or anything we can actually attribute to say, like, look, since social gaming's popularity has risen, teenage depression has gone down, or teenage suicide rates? Like, is there anything we can quantify to that?
Yeah, so I love that you made this point so much. I love that you made this point. Okay, so there's a lot of research that looks, for instance, at playing online games and depression, or playing online games and friendship networks. And they look at correlation. So that's saying when one thing goes up, the other thing also either goes up or goes down. And the headlines tend to be, oh, these people play a lot of games and their depression is really high, so the narrative must be that games exacerbate depression. Well, just in the last 2 or 3 years, people are saying, well, wait a minute, it could also be that people who are more depressed are more drawn to games because of the socially compensating nature of the environment, because of the reason you said exactly. I feel depressed and lonely, but it's easily accessible to get to this world of like-minded individuals who won't, you know, judge me on my appearance or judge me from other things in my life, and I can be myself and I can play and have a fun activity I do together. And this, in terms, may relieve depression or may extend my social network. Is there any work you can draw upon? No, I'm working on it. But only just because of the constraints of, you know, academic literature. But when you see the headlines about, you know, depression has, you know, gone up over the last X number of years, and this must be because social networking has also become more popular, those kinds of headlines have been disputed when you actually dig into the numbers of the research. So depression is lower than it was 20 years ago. People are more networked than they were 20 years ago. So,
and let's just face it, teens are depressed. Like, but, it's a shitty part. It's a shitty part of life.
It's a difficult time of life. And honestly, the average gamer is an adult and not a teenager. The average gamer is in their mid-30s. It's kind of also when we get to the argument about violent video games, it's always, oh, the teenagers. Well, if you look, crime among children under the age of 18, teenagers, has been going down exponentially in the last 20 years, whereas the rate of video game consumption has gone up. So if you think that violent video games are contributing to under 18-year-olds committing violent crime, the lines are, they completely contradict each other. There's no relationship between those two variables. And the same can be said of everything else. I mean, at the end of the day, the effect of media of any kind, games, video, movies, television, is negligible to our behavior.
Now, you talk about the violent video games. I agree. There's no studies, and I've heard some of your other talks about this, that there is no evidence that says that there's an increase of aggression because you play aggressive video games or anything else. But there still is a certain level of appropriateness that we have to try to achieve. And, and you know, the next Call of Duty game or whatever else, yeah, it's going to have a mature rating on it. But we all know that there's still a whole lot of non-mature people playing these games. And we're talking about teenagers, younger children, even the cartoonish video games of like Fortnite and stuff are still violent in nature. They're just not as graphic in nature. At what point is it really appropriate? Is it just stick to the video game recommendations and really only 18 or older should be playing it? Is there a time to bring your teenagers into this game because all their friends are playing it? Really, what's the right approach?
Yeah, it's a hard one when all the friends are playing in. I know that's so hard for parents. My approach that I recommend is every child is different. I would start with the ESRB ratings for sure. I mean, that's a good starting point. And not just the age ratings, but they have a lot of these content placards that tells you exactly why it has this age rating. So it can be 18 and over and maybe because of violence, or it can be 18 or over because of suggestive themes or foul language, or there's more than one reason it can be labeled a mature game. And people know their children. They know what their children are capable and mature of handling. I mean, would you show a child an R-rated movie? Is your child mature enough to handle an R-rated movie at 16 years old? I mean, I can't judge. I don't know your child. But I would definitely heed the age ratings. They're there for a reason. They're created by a board of experts. I mean, I have been in game stores where there's, you know, 10-year-olds picking up mature level games and their parents are like, yeah, yeah, whatever. And they just buy them. It's like, well, at least look at the package.
Are they set by experts, though? Because I know the movie rating system is not.
The ESRB,
the movie rating system is actually a very... I've watched a few documentaries on it, and it's kind of a messed up system. It's very arbitrary. Nobody has any training. It's a select few group of people that... It's like a little club that wants to rule over what people think is appropriate, you know. But is the video game rating system, the people who rate the video games, are they actually trained psychologists or trained, you know, like have a specialty in this area?
Yeah, I don't know if they're psychologists. They are definitely trained. The ESRB definitely trains the people that they hire to create to create the ratings board. I'm not exactly sure what their background is. But it's not like an algorithm. Like I think it is for movies, right? It's like this many curse words, this many.
Yeah, it's actually like a group of eight people that sit in a dark room and just chit chat about what kind of feels they got during the movie, and anything that gave me bad feels will dictate, you know, how the movie rating goes. And if you read a lot of stories in Hollywood, that's a big problem for people making these movies, because there's really no guideline. It's very arbitrary, and it's a very small group of people that make those ratings. And it's actually good to know that there's a professionalism to the video gaming community.
Oh, yes, there is. You're really, really concerned, the PEGI system, the system that's used in Europe, is extraordinarily strict. So if you want, you know, an even more stringent approach to the ratings and the classification of the content in games, you can go on their website and they will tell you like the ratings and why they rated a game a certain way.
And they break it down further, in subcategories and things greater than what we do here.
Yes.
We continue to talk about, I think we cycle back towards talking about a negative and then we treat it into some kind of positive with the social side of things to keep hitting, you know, the negative or the stereotype is often that, you know, it just deadens your brain. You're just shutting off your brain and disconnecting. Could you talk a bit about, you know, the positives, the cognitive benefits that can take place through being engaged in a video game?
Yeah. And I think this also goes underrated, because when we talk about cognitive benefits, a lot of people talk like hand-eye coordination and visual spatial learning, which is very important and absolutely can be honed. So much so that games are being used specifically, you know, to train people in improving their skills in this area. But there's a lot of what I like to call unintentional learning that occurs when you play video games. So these are, you're learning things even though you're not playing an educational game. For instance, I played a lot of Civilization as a child. I still do. They're quite good. But you unintentionally learn, you know, world history, about world leaders, about the wonders of the world, those sorts of things. But you can also learn leadership skills. World of Warcraft, perfect for honing leadership skills, especially among younger players, because then you have teenagers leading groups of adults, which is quite interesting and a learning experience you wouldn't normally have in everyday life. You can learn cultural knowledge of other people around the world that you're playing with, and you can expand your worldviews. You are expanding your social networks. So yeah, there's a whole range of unintentional things that occur when playing games, not just related to hand-eye coordination and visual spatial skills, but creativity can be increased, leadership skills, as I mentioned, social skills, all of these things.
Is there any science that talks about so people's ability to process information and make decisions? You know, there's nothing in real life that challenges your brain to recognize patterns, identify potential problems, and then quickly act on a solution. And I find benefit in that. And I don't know if that's really a quantifiable benefit or something that's happened in studies.
Oh, yes. Multitasking, time management skills. I mean, think of raid leading. All of these things are being honed unintentionally.
We would have to have meetings, two-day meetings before you go into a boss fight and make sure it was like a choreographed dance almost. You know when you have to dispel. You know when you have to do this. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people I got Karazhan keyed in my lifetime. It was, especially the old vanilla days.
Yeah.
If you wanted your totems as a shaman, you had to literally walk hundreds of miles in a video game, and it was all about, asking people, randoms in a city, where can I find this? There's a lot of, in World of Warcraft, there's the auction house. There's a lot of bartering and trading. You learn a lot about economy and budgeting and things like that when you play that game.
Yep.
I do see the correlations to a lot of.
I just want to play real life Leroy learning. Jenkins clip right in the middle of you talking about this.
Go ahead, troll the WoW kids. Go ahead, it's all good.
There is science to support all of that, so. So children, it's not a waste of your time. Parents, it's not a waste of their time.
How do we bring awareness to this kind of science? And how do we bring awareness to these numbers and get people to, I'm not trying to say that we should all be pro gaming, like your kids should be playing video games, make them play video games.
Yeah.
But there is this really big negative connotation that parents think that if my kid has a controller in their hand, if they're staring at a TV for too long, there's nothing good that can come out of this.
Right. I know. And it's unfortunate because it's not true. That is why I wrote A Parent's Guide to Video Games. That's the exact reason. Game studies as a research field, has grown so much over the last 10, 15 years. But all the information still seems to be very insulated within the academic community. There's not that much that gets out. And what does get out is, the headlines that are clickbait, the clickbait headlines, violent video games and violence. If you see a marginal increase in aggression 2 minutes after playing a video game, it must make you violent in real life. And that's the headline you get. It's not so much of a sexy headline to say like, oh, look, games are social and people make friends. Like nobody wants to write that article. I don't know why. Getting the word out is hard. It's really, really hard. And it's an uphill battle. But, games are just the latest in a long line of new media to get this kind of pigeonholing and stereotyping. Crosswords were seen as being dangerous. There are op-eds back in the 1800s about how crosswords are terrible because it's going to make people literate, and that would be the worst. We saw it with that, then you see it with rock and roll, you saw it with movies, you see it with television, radio. Now we have video games. So, I'm not quite sure how much time has to pass until the moral panic side of it fades away. But
do you see a lot of this being kind of like a natural progression? We have doctors on Segways on iPads going to treat patients. Yeah. We have business meetings that are conducted solely on Skype and on screens. We are moving towards a screened lifestyle, I guess you could say. We're in front of screens constantly, and we kind of like pick and choose what's a good screen and what's a bad screen. Doctor treating me from an iPad, good, but me making friends on a video game, bad. Like, how do we rationalize that?
Well, at least we have that distinction now, because that's relatively new. Over only like the last year, I think the screen time limits for children, it was always like 2 hours of screens a day, no matter what they're doing. And now it's like, well, maybe it's different if they're Skyping with their grandma versus, playing Endless Learning Academy or whatever. It's because video games have that reputation. They're just the next in the line of media. I think it's because it has to do with the fact that it seems to be a frivolous activity. It seems to only get press that is negative. And if you think about it, if you're a parent who doesn't play games and doesn't have experience in it, and your only exposure is the headlines that you see, of course you think, oh my gosh, if my children has a controller in their hand, something terrible is going to happen to them.
But that's such a missed opportunity for the parents. And that's, my father didn't play a lot of video games. But I still have spectacular memories. Our father passed years ago, and I still have some great memories of playing golf on Super Nintendo, Hal Golf with my dad.
Dollar a hole, man. Dollar for closest to the pin. Yeah. We would gamble. Like.
Well, we don't have to talk about the. we'll ignore the gambling part. But having a shared interest with. Mm-hmm. With my kids, maintaining a shared interest with my kids as they continue to grow, and having a shared interest with my father was extremely meaningful. And if that shared interest just happens to be controllers in our hands sitting on a couch next to each other, I probably wasn't sitting on that couch without it.
Right.
And it's a missed opportunity for people to continue to believe these stereotypes.
Yeah. And I mean, my advice to parents is always, I understand if you don't want to play games. Not everybody does. I get it. It's not everyone's jam. That's fine. But you can sit in the room with them. And you can watch what they're playing. If you're concerned about the games they're playing, sit and watch and see what they're playing. Ask them, why do you like this game? You know, it could be because of the fantasy element. It could be because of the social element. And you can build other activities to do together with your children based on the elements that it is that they like from these games. So if they really like the costumes in World of Warcraft and I know how to sew, it's like, hey, well, how would you like to make a costume together? Like, it is an opportunity not just to play games together, but to think of other related activities that you can do together based on your children's interests.
Now, shouldn't that percentage of parents that didn't play video games and don't understand video games, shouldn't that percentage kind of be going down with every, you know, half decade or generation? You know, I remember physically opening my Nintendo at like 6 years old, you know, so I'm probably the second generation of parents that grew up with video games. Mm-hmm. Like we're going to hit a point now where almost every parent had video games and you may not have played them, mm-hmm. but you're not going to find anybody under the age of 40 that at least doesn't know what a PlayStation is or what an Xbox is. Do we see this problem kind of maybe naturally fizzing away, that the negativity atoned to video games, just based on the fact that the people that grew up without video games are retiring right now? They're moving to Florida. They're not raising the new batch of kids. Like,
well, I mean, there's two parts of that. One is that there's still definitely people who have not been exposed to games, even though it is like very prolific and everywhere. The people who play, you know, crosswords on their phone are still not people who are necessarily like in the know with like what is Fortnite. So, I mean, in a sense, yes, but then VR is going to be the problem. Because then VR is going to be the next thing in the long line of new technologies to take the hit, because we didn't grow up with it. And if we see our children at 10, 12 years old walking around with Oculus glasses or whatever it is, like a Black Mirror episode, we're going to be back on this podcast saying, those children, you know, with the VR, something's wrong with them.
So it's kind of like music. Every parent just has to hate their kids' music.
I mean, honestly.
It's just how it goes. It's a rite of passage.
It's a rite of passage, but it's just so unfortunate when it comes with games, because games are such rich tools for learning. And they really are. And the world is transitioning that way. Like, pilots in the military are being trained on, you know, how to fly drones.
Flight simulators. You fly drones. Drones fight our wars, and it's basically a video game.
They're playing a video game. And, like, doctors as well. They do so many simulations, you know, with video games. And just being familiar with the technology, I'm sure, is an asset by the time they make it all the way through medical school. But
now, I did want to ask one more question before I think we be respectful of your time and wrap up. But Steve mentioned video games and gambling a few minutes ago. But
I
had a question. Yeah. So very recently, they're trying to pass legislation to get rid of loot boxes in video games, that any video game that's rated for children to play or advertised for children. Yeah, microtransactions, loot boxes. Is this really a concern that parents or anybody should care about? Or is this just something that is topical right now and it's an attempt to
fall into government regulation or parental oversight? Like, where in that spectrum should we be leaning?
A few things to unpack. First of all, I don't believe that loot boxes are gambling, and I think that's where a lot of the concern comes from, because with loot boxes you always get something. And with gambling, you lose something, you have the potential to lose something. So I think that that distinction alone differentiates it from gambling. Parents should be concerned if they don't have parental controls on their games and their children have access to their credit card. I would be concerned because they're going to buy the loot boxes because the loot boxes are created to be enticing and little confetti pops out and something fun comes out and maybe I'll get, you know, a really spectacular in-game advantage and maybe I won't. For me, I think this falls under parental regulation just simply because I do not think that they are analogous to gambling. But definitely, you know, put some parental controls on there. Your kids are going to spend thousands of dollars on loot boxes because they are designed to be, you know, enticing.
Yeah, and even like free apps for children and that are designed and targeted as like learning ones, they almost sometimes have these loot box type things in order to, you finish this one segment and you get a random free surprise or whatever else. I thought when I first saw it that it was just, I don't foresee that as being equal to my kid pulling the arm on a slot machine, which is what they try to paint it out to be. But yeah, you know, maybe I'm just ignorant on it. But it, like you said, there's no real science behind it.
Is there not a similarity though to like we said, the dopamine hit of like compared to, I'm assuming the same parts of your brain light up when you scratch off a lottery scratcher and then when you open a loot box. Like I'm assuming it's the same sensory, you know, receptors and the same kind of hit. And is that not addictive?
Right. So that is something that is said a lot. And I think the best counter argument to that comes from Chris Ferguson. He's a professor at Stetson University. And he talks a lot about how the dopamine pathway lights up with anything pleasurable. That donut I was talking about earlier, it lights up when I eat that donut. It lights up when I see an old friend. It lights up when I open a loot box. So to say that they both light up, sure, but anything pleasurable is going to light that pathway and anything pleasurable is going to give you that same rush and that same feeling. So sure they do, but I don't think that makes it any more addictive than anything more pleasurable that we seek out on a daily basis. I mean, I live far from a donut shop, so I'm trying to mitigate that risk, but yeah.
No, it's very interesting. I do appreciate the fact that you are kind of spearheading a different take on video game culture. I do believe that it's really needed. As a person that has a few video game tattoos myself, and like I said, I have very fond memories, just the same as my brother, of playing video games with my dad, my sister. They used to play Minesweeper religiously, and that, I don't think any of them realized the brain exercises they were doing by playing such a mathematical game and a timed game. I don't think, you know, my dad did it because he wanted to spend time with his daughter. Don't realize that you are building certain characteristics that have benefits in your children from it. So just to be able to, one, make parents like me who believe in gaming and can see the benefits for my children in gaming, at least give me some reassurance, you know, but at the same time also trying to expose parents that are very hesitant to let their kids game, expose them to a more constructive way to participate in gaming, and that I think what you're doing is very important for our community.
I mean, it's a really, like you said, it's a missed opportunity if you don't at least sit with your children when they play. And at the end of the day, you know, games are great and they can, you know, teach us creativity and multitasking and all of these things. They absolutely can. But the impact of media on our measures of psychological well-being and behavior, at the very least, are neutral. So parents can have that reassurance. They're positive or at the very least neutral. It's not going to cause any long-term, on any measure that's ever been measured, detrimental impact. Of course, video game addiction is an aside, and that's a whole other conversation. But
as they say, everything in moderation.
And that relates to a very small fraction of the people we're talking about here.
Dr. Cord, I appreciate you coming on the podcast and talking with us. I wanted to make sure that if you'd like take a minute, because as Steve talked, you're doing great things for our community, and one of them being Take This, your work with Take This. And if you could please for a moment just talk about what that's doing for our gaming community.
Take This is such a great organization. I'm so happy to be on board. I joined them this year. They provide a range of resources and information, as I mentioned, about mental health to the gaming industry and the gaming community. And as you've probably seen from the headlines recently, the gaming industry is having some difficulties with, you know, maintaining high qualities of mental health within the employees within the industry. So we consult with individuals about how to better support their employees, how to employ better working conditions to avoid some of these negative outcomes that seem to be running a bit rampant in the industry these days. In regards to the community, we do a lot of outreach. We run the AFK rooms at various conventions across the globe, which are reserved quiet spaces that are staffed by clinicians and trained volunteers. If case you get a little overwhelmed from the hustle and bustle of a convention hall, it's a nice place to go and have a coloring book and have a glass of water and just sit and chat with someone. So I joined as their research director. So we're spearheading more research activities these days, and we're going to be releasing a white paper in the next month that's talking specifically about diversity and inclusion and the challenges they have with the gaming industry and within the gaming community in regards to that. So that's really exciting.
It's great that you're doing that. It's great that you've put together such great resources for parents and nerds like ourselves, again, with both your books, right? The Gaming Debate as well as Parents Guide. And truly appreciate what you've done. I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So thank you very much for sitting with us. And we hope maybe we'll have another discussion when you really get everybody to get on board with us, and we'll have a victory. We'll have another victory lap on the podcast. And,
for sure. Thank you for having me.
And we'll check out your druid on clinical role.
There you go. Once a month, you can catch us.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, nerds, thanks for listening to our first interview of the interview series for the Nerd Cantina Show.
Yeah, we hope you really enjoyed that interview and you could take away some information. I know a lot of our Facebook feeds and everything are filled with articles about gaming and violence and how gaming and screen time are negative to children. And it's good to get a different perspective from it.
A level-headed approach. No doomsday there. There are some concerns. There are some things you want to look into as far as appropriateness and understanding your child's reaction to some of the stimuli, but definitely not a doomsday approach towards this at all.
Well, and I think a lot of the points that we hit about the positive side, I think a lot of the fellow gamers see that. I think anybody that's active in the video game community sees the benefits of it. So it's good to have that kind of scientific confirmation that we aren't just making this up to make ourselves feel better about our gaming time, and for the parents that aren't gamers, that their children are gamers, to give them some counterpoints to the constant barrage of negativity they get about their kids playing video games.
Yeah, and I mentioned it into the lead into the interview, but we tend to think that the vast majority of our normal audience listening to these shows are nerds, and they've probably had a pretty good relationship with video games in their lives. But share this with somebody who hasn't had a video games be a part of their lives as maybe a reason why they don't need to look at their children's activity in this realm as a negative, and how to kind of shift the mindset in other parents that may not naturally gravitate towards it. I was always going to be letting my kids play video games. This didn't change anything for the way I was going to incorporate it, other than just understanding maybe some positives and some, I guess, more appropriate ways to integrate it into my household. But there's some people that, you know, that their kids are never going to play Fortnite. My kids are never going to play X. And maybe share this with them. Just see if they're willing to take a listen and open their mind to some actual scientific-backed, research-backed thoughts on the video game industry and the benefits it can have for your children, the benefits it can have for their social well-being, their mental well-being at times. It's not something that should be completely abstained from in any parent's toolbox there.
Yeah, if you're a parent and you got a kid that's a AB student that is well-mannered and respectful and, you know,
other than the fact that he locks himself in his room, plays video games for 3 hours a night, you're completely happy with your child. Don't let that 3 hours be the reason that you think something is going wrong in his life or that he's doing something negative in his life. You know, if you have a kid that is totally on track, you know, but you think he just is a little antisocial and spends too much time gaming, this might help you get a little bit of different perspective on it.
You have a child who's not on track, right? But is using video games as an outlet. Maybe that's an opportunity for a parent to relate to their child, to sit down and see what's going on with them, to open up dialogue, and then to understand that, you know, maybe some of the struggles they're having elsewhere, they're not having in the video game world because people are more open-minded there. They're like-minded. They're their friends. They're the social circles that they gravitate towards. And maybe there's a way for you to tap into that. And there's a way for you to bring that back into productivity and in other areas they may be struggling.
Yeah, and if you like the episode, leave us comments on our threads. Join the Facebook group. Start a discussion there. Those comments that you leave, we may address in a future interview. If you have any other concerns or something that we didn't really touch on that are unique to your situation, let us know. Give us a heads up. Leave us a short paragraph about, you know, what's going on in your relationship between your children and video games. And maybe we could address that then.
All right, real quick, we just wanted to mention one of our favorite new apps, which is PodCoin. So assuming that because you're listening to our podcast today, that you happen to be a podcasting nerd. And if you are, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to get paid for your time.
I'm a big fan of getting paid to do stuff that I do in my daily routine anyways. I have signed up for all the rewards programs possible. And with PodCoin, you actually get paid to listen to podcasts. So every minute that goes by that you're listening to your podcast, you are throwing away potential money.
So go ahead, download PodCoin app on either through iTunes or through the Google Play Store. And when you sign up with the promo code NERDCANTINA.
One word. That'll get you 300 free coins towards your account and get you on your way to earning that first reward from either Amazon gift cards, Target gift cards, all kinds of things. You could also donate your coins to your favorite charity that they offer. So there's a lot of good things. You're going to be listening to podcasts anyways. You might as well get some free stuff for doing it. Download the PodCoin app, put in the code NERDCANTINA, get your free coins, and start earning money while you listen to our show.
All right. Well, again, thanks for listening, and see you again next time.
See you next week, nerds.
Goodbye, nerds.